Okay, so continuing within the, again, strategies of Kavanah. So last week we spoke about quieting the mind, taking time to prepare, doing something, and feeling the need. So this week we're going to move into a few new other ones. So the fifth one is understanding the meaning. Now, we know if we give a small child a $100 bill, there's not much that to the child means anything other than it's a scrap of green paper. And he'll either color it or cut it up. And he won't know the value, the true value of what he really lost. So in order to value something, you have to know what it is and what it's really worth. So a person who davens with little understanding of what he's saying or what the words are supposed to accomplish is missing that source of inspiration. And he's missing that ability to have the proper kavanah. And therefore, learning Pirush HaMilos, the beer of the tefillah, are vital steps in developing kavanah and maintaining it for your davening. And this goes back as early as the 14th century. The Avadrum recognized that people were having issues with this, and he writes in his introduction to his Sefer, he wrote, "Most of the masses raise their voice in tefillah before Hashem, but are going about it like a blind man in darkness, and they do not understand the words they are saying. When I saw this, I decided to write the Sefer, the Avadrum HaSholem, which is a Sefer on explains tefillah." The Chovos HaLevavos tells us, in Chashar Cheshvan and Efesh, he says, "V'chein tase b'tfilos uv'sishbachos me'estakel b'miloson u'magamas in yonehem." A person should observe the words, what he's doing with them, k'dei sh'tiyah b'es sh'dedav b'en lefnei Elokecha, that at the moment when you speak before Hashem, yudei ma'ashem motzi l'shoncha min amilos, you know what you're saying, ma'ashem vakish lipcha b'inyon, and you know what your heart is wanting to get out of this. Yosef Omitz also writes that he believes that the ikker learning a person should do, the first learning, I should say, a person should do in life is learning about davening, Pirush HaMilos, understanding davening, and that comes really before any other learning. And Rav Sheftel Horowitz, who was the head of the Beis Din and the yeshiva in Frankfurt, wrote that he instituted groups that they would get together to study the tefillos, and they would start from the beginning of the year, and these groups would run all year. And in that way, they would learn the meaning of the word so that the tefillos would be able to go up to Shemayim. And just like we know, if a person had no sense of taste, what would motivate him to bite into a juicy steak? If it didn't taste like anything, you know, why would we do it? Why would we subject ourselves to that freezing sensation of ice cream? And the Altar of Kelm said, if people ate for the sake of nutrition alone, just because it's good for you, people would waste away. Therefore, the same is by davening. The taste is in the meaning. And some tefillos, all tefillos really, but there are some really beautiful tefillos, but are written difficultly. For example, one tefillah, Yikum Porkun, is a tefillah that if we took the time and we found the siddur of that translation, we could see what a beautiful tefillah that we're saying at that moment, what we're asking, what we're davening, as opposed to, it's the beginning of the race to the end of Shabbos davening. Number six, davening from a siddur. And we know that just as one who drives has to follow road signs and pay attention to those road signs, so to davening, you need to pay attention and follow the road signs. We've already mentioned back in the Vod when we spoke about Purim, how the grump brought from the Megillas Esther that one is supposed to daven from a siddur, as that will help cast away any inappropriate thoughts by looking in. And the Mogen Avram tells us, and that's the second thing here, he says, the Arizal, ha'yimispal toch ha'sefer, the Arizal would daven looking inside, k'dei sheichaven mod, in order that he would be able to have the proper kavana. And the Chavetz Chaim also says that using a siddur is one of the foremost priorities in order to have proper tefillah. So looking in is something that's very important. There was once the Altar of Kelm was davening from a siddur, and in the middle of davening, he walked to the back of the shul, picked up a second siddur, looked inside for a second, and then went back to his seat. And afterwards, someone asked him, what was pshat? You had your siddur, what were you doing? And he said, there was a word missing in my siddur. And because I always daven inside, so yes, I know the word, but since I look inside, I went to find the second siddur that had that word, looked at it, read it inside, and then went back to my seat for the rest of davening. The Manchester Yeshiva of Yehuda Zev Segal, who was famous for his Koach HaTfila, not only davened from a siddur, but was often seen pointing into the siddur. He would point to each word as he davened. And 1 year of Kalman Krohn, the son of Pesach Krohn, traveled to Manchester to spend the Yom Narayim with the Rosh Hashiva. And shortly after Rosh Hashanah, Rav Kalman came across a list of commitments that the Manchester Rosh Hashiva had set for that year. And on that list was he was going to increase his kavana in the bracha of Atachonin. So Rav Kalman figured that if the Rosh Hashiva is going to work in Atachonin, why not? I'll write my name in his siddur next to Atachonin. And this way, when he's working Atachonin, he'll daven for me too. And before returning to America, he had charata. He felt bad. You know, I didn't ask for rishus. You know, maybe I shouldn't have done it. So he went to ask mechila. And the Rosh Hashiva told him, he said, there's nothing for me to forgive. He says, I didn't even know that your name was written in my siddur. Because when I daven, I don't even look outside of the line where the words are. And therefore, I never even saw your name there, and there's nothing to ask mechila about. So being able to focus and realize again what we're saying and looking at it certainly helps. And we know that if you daven from a siddur, you're keeping Hashem's name before you. It's not just we're saying Hashem's name, but we see the shame. We see the shame Hashem. And the Stipler tells us that by davening from a siddur and seeing the shame Hashem, well, to say it with the proper kavana. Also, it helps us by looking in, he says, to have kavana on the first bracha Shemoneh Esrei. And it's something that, amongst all the gedolim, it was something that was very special, davening from a siddur. It was found amongst the writings of Reb Chaim Ozer, an Erev Yom Kippur of 1934, that he was going to, that year, daven and say brachos from a text. He was going to look in whenever he davened to said any brachos. And Rav Shach, in order to show how phenomenal this was to Reb Chaim Ozer, told over a story of who Reb Chaim Ozer was. He said Reb Chaim Ozer used to keep a notebook that listed all the deposits and expenses that they were made for various different orphans and widows. And one time it was misplaced, and it was not able to be found. And Reb Chaim Ozer's wife became distraught, because it's a loss for a lot of people, a lot of orphans, a lot of, you know, widows, almanos. You know, there's a lot of money that was lost. And when Reb Chaim Ozer heard what happened, he just asked for a new notebook, and he reconstructed the entire notebook, you know, from his memory. And a little while later, they found the original notebook and found that detail for detail, it was exactly as the original. So even someone who, obviously, with a memory like that, who was able to daven by heart and daven, you know, without an issue, davening inside a text was something important, and therefore looking in is something that will certainly help to build kavana. 7, mastering our minds. Now, most of us find the minute we sit down to davening, there are a lot of foreign thoughts that have nothing to do with tefillah that pop in. And Rav Dessler explains that foreign thoughts are not thoughts that are foreign to us, they're thoughts that are foreign to the davening. And there are different parts of our day or nature that come in. And Derech HaTzaddikim tells us, he says, if you want to know how to work on your davening, to daven with kavana, ki rov bitel hakavana betfila, most things that, you know, are mevatel the kavana by davening, ba midvarim betelim akvum belibo, are from the dvarim betelim that are already inside of you. From the different things that we've spoken, different things we've done during the day, those things are the things that distract us from kavana. And the Reish Chachma recommends, he says, when a person's out on the street, when he's walking, when he's out and about, he recommends that a person lowers his eyes where he's looking more towards the ground. Not only does this help for a Shmiras Anayim issue, especially out in L.A., but it certainly helps where you don't notice everything in the street and your mind is not reconstructing what you've seen as you were walking, the billboard, whatever it is that you passed. You're not reconstructing it then during davening. Rav Elia Lapian says that Hashem hears with equal clarity one's thoughts in davening and one's words in davening. However, He gives more credence to the thoughts than what we say. And therefore, when we're up there saying Shemoneh Esrei and our minds are thinking about whether it's work or home or what we've seen or who knows what's going through our minds, Hashem's listening to the thoughts and the words are, you know, to Him are more background. So how can one eliminate these foreign thoughts? So the Raiva tells us that it's not possible to concentrate on two things, unless you're a Chaim Ozer, who was able to do both, actually. We sometimes think we can, but if we honestly ask our wives, they will tell us that we really can't, and therefore when we check our emails and texts and say, yes, dear, we're really not paying any attention. And therefore, if we have in mind when we... that we have in mind when we're focusing on the words of davening, the foreign thoughts will not be able to come into our minds. And I actually had a Rebbe of mine once tell me this. He said when he davens, he pictures each word in his mind. And by picturing the word, his mind is filled with thoughts, and therefore he can't possibly think of other things at the same time. Another solution is to internalize the belief that these foreign thoughts are unacceptable now. And there's a story, and I don't remember if I have the exact details, but I think basically, there was a story once when a man went to his Rebbe and said, you know, I can't control the thoughts that enter my mind. And the Rebbe told him, go to the next town, go to so-and-so's house, and he's going to help you. And he sets off, he gets there at night, he knocks on the door, the person asks, who is it? He says, you know, I'm so-and-so, the Rebbe told me to come. Door doesn't open. Waits a little bit, tries again. Same thing plays out. Then it's starting to get cold. It's getting dark. He's getting desperate. Tries again. Finally, he gives up. Just huddles in a corner for the night to try to stay warm. In the morning, the owner of the house opens the door, invites him in, gives him a big breakfast. And the guy now is very confused. You know, something's not adding up. And he says to him, you know, what's going on? Last night, it was freezing out here. I was knocking on your door. And you just kept ignoring me. And now in the morning, you're treating me like, you know, it's unbelievable. And the host explained, he says, I'm the Bala boss here. I decide who comes in. I decide when they come in. I'm in charge. And at that point, the guy understood why the Rebbe sent him. Because he's the Bala boss of his mind. At least we hope we're the Bala boss of our minds. And we decide what comes in and what stays. And if we put our minds, if we put ourselves in charge, so when that thought knocks on the door to come in, if we shut the door and don't let it in, then we'll be able to have the control, the mastering of our mind. Or if we let the thought in, then the thought becomes the Bala boss of our home, you know, and becomes much more difficult to have proper kavana. The last one I'm going to do for today is working on old habits. And we know that force of habit is exactly that. It's a force. And it's a fact that it's a tremendous force which everyone has to deal with any time we want to improve ourselves. Whatever we want to change in life, it's a massive force to the point that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the Slav and the Mun, Rashi brings that Moshe said a tefillah that, you know, from now on you should learn how to eat properly, because till now you were like chickens that pecked whenever you were fed food, you just ate, you know, immediately. And now Hashem's setting up, there's a breakfast, there's a dinner, so that you should, you know, be able to change that hergel. So anytime we want to do such a thing, we have to deal with such a force. Now, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us, it says, the Tanya, Hayir, Meir, Omer, Shnaim, Shol, Lomita, there were two people that were in bed, V'cholayin, they were sick, Shavah, equally. Or it says there were two others. In another case, we'll deal with the sick for right now. Zeh Yard, V'zeh Lo Yard, one got better, one did not get better. Zeh Espal V'nene, Zeh Espal V'lo Nene, one davened and was answered, one davened that was not answered. And the Gemara says, V'bnei Ma Zeh Nene, V'zeh Lo Nene. What was the difference? They both davened. Why was one answered and one not? And the Gemara says, Zeh Espal Tfilah Shlema Nene. The one who davened the complete tefillah was answered. V'zeh Lo Espal Tfilah Shlema Lo Nene. The one who did not daven the complete tefillah was not saved. And Rashi just explains, what's a tefillah Shlema? He says, Neskavein, someone who has Kavona. And we know that if we calculate that we daven three times a day and say almost 1,100 Shemoneh Esreis a year, this constant repetition makes for a mindless Shemoneh Esrei. And it becomes a habit. We come in, we just say Shemoneh Esrei, we just go. And a result of this habit, even facing death, a chola can have trouble having the proper kavana because it's very hard to break this habit. And therefore, developing positive habits counteract and replace the negative habits. And therefore, one has to set a goal and take small steps towards the goal. You begin with one piece of davening during one tefillah. For example, let's say you took the first bracha Shemoneh Esrei. After you do that for 2-3 weeks, a month, you add it then by mincha, and then you add it the same thing by ma'ariv until you have it in all your tefillahs, and then you add another part of your davening until eventually your entire davening becomes a positive habit, and with that you replace the negative habit. And momentum is the element that gives habit a strength. So once you get it going, you know, the momentum will keep it moving. And each time we repeat it, that driving force that we're now building to counter the negative will keep the positive moving forward. And as Chazal tell us, hergel nasateva, that something that is a habit becomes our nature, And we have to just keep in mind that this works both for good and for bad habits. And therefore, if we work on it for the good, and we replace some of the habits that we've developed, where we go through davening a little bit without much thought or without much, realization of what we're doing, we'll then be able to daven and have the proper kavana through the davening. The story and then the homework. So there was a Rebbe in a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael that the first day, as every Rebbe does, was going through taking attendance. And when he got to the last boy in the room, the boy said his name was Yochanan Hassandler Elbaz. And he expected the class to chuckle because it's an interesting name. He's looking around. There's no one smirking, no winking the eyes. So Rebbe's happy he caught himself before he jumped at the kid. And he decided, I'm going to stop by the principal and find out, you know, what's going on here. And the principal tells this Rebbe a story. He says it was 1992, and there was a man named Yaron Elbaz. And he was out working on a highway outside Beit Shemesh. And the only thing that he had that was going bad for him was that they were childless. Him and his wife were not able to have children. And some of his traditional friends said, you know what, why don't you go to some of the holy sites? There are a lot of, you know, places you can pray. Yeah, and he was skeptical on such things. And one day while working, he noticed there was a lot of traffic heading north. And he asked one of his friends, and the friend said, you know, it's Lag BaOmer, and, you know, people go up to the kever of Shimon Bar Yochai on that day. So, you know, someone again said, you know, why don't you go? You know, he says, nah, with all this traffic, it doesn't make sense to do. The next year is the same time of year again, and again, he sees the people, you know, the traffic, you know, everyone's going. And he's about an hour drive away. So one of the friends who has a few children said, you know what, I'll go with you. You know, he hesitated, but okay, you know what, what does he have to do? And, you know, there's a lot of traffic. The doubt started to come as they're creeping along, and he said, you know what, I'm just going back home. But then he thought about his wife, and he looked around at the other cars, you know, the different people from the different backgrounds, Hasidic, Sephardic, not Frum, and they all had cars with children. And he thought about that pain. He said, you know what, I'm going to go. And hour by hour, inch by inch, they're moving up the hill. Finally, he parks, and he starts the walk the rest of the way to the kever. And as he's coming, there's another kever there that's empty, and that's the kever of Yochanan Assembler. And, you know, he says, you know what, maybe I want to just stay away from the crowd. I'll stop over here. And he, you know, went up to the kever, and he spoke to Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, and he said, you know what it feels like? You know what it's like for people to have children and have crowds? You know, down the road there are thousands of people at the next kever, and look at you, you're all alone. So you know what it's like to be alone. You know what, please give me a child. And 9 months later, he had this child, which he named Yochanan Sandler, after the Tanu who he davened for. And to the point that this Yochanan Sandler was growing up not frum, and every week he went out Shabbos, as they do in Eretz Yisrael, to join the soccer league. And eventually some man approached them and was talking about, you know, being frum, and Yochanan Sandler got attached to it. And he slowly started doing some mitzvos. He was wondering about tefillin. He was 12. You know, he started to wonder about it. And one day, the father came to the soccer field and said, "No, where's Yochanan? Yochanan Sandler?" And they didn't really want to answer the question because they knew what was going on. And so he went home and he figured he'll wait. His son will come home. He'll ask him. He says, "No, so how was soccer today?" He says, "Oh, it was great. This, that, you know." And of course, the father, knowing he was lying, got all upset at him. And he grabbed his son and he, you know, was all upset. And then the father looked up to Shemayim and said, "Yochanan Sandler Nitzchani, you defeated me because not only did you give me a child, but you gave me, a child that became frum." But you see the koach tefillah, though, that if someone, you know, who he didn't necessarily even believe in it, but, you know, he gave it the shot and poured out his heart. So, you know, you see what the tefillah can do. This week, and this is a little more, I think this is going to be the hardest of the homeworks we've given. So, just the chazot we've done the first eight, we've been working on the Kaddish after Aleinu, the Kaddish by Rabbi Shmuel, the Kavana for Kriya Shema in the morning, the Mitzvah to say of Kriya Shema, and the Mitzvah to say at night. We've been working on the Kaddish after Ashrei and not talking after Baruch Hu by Marv. Then the last two times we added coming on time to one tefillah day, coming on time to a second tefillah, and now based on that story we told over from Rabbi Friend, the homework is to pick one of the three tefillos and not to talk to anyone once you come to shul prior to that tefillah. And just to be then focus on, now I'm here to daven, and not to engage in conversation.